To read out of the 13th chapter, one verse especially in here, maybe some more. Verse 11, though, says, I gave thee a king in mine anger and took him away in my wrath. This is referring to Saul, and this is the one, you remember, I was telling you how that God told Samuel, he says, you go ahead and anoint him because they rejected me and not you. So I gave you a king, Saul, in my anger, and then took him away in my wrath. The iniquity of Ephraim is bound up, his sin is hid. Sorrows of travailing woman shall come upon him. He is an unwise son. He should not stay long in the place of the breaking forth of children. In the 13th chapter of Hosea 13, and then verse 14, I will ransom them from the power of the grave. I will redeem them from death. And so again, we find that God is still going to raise Israel up, regardless of the places that they have been and the depths that they have sunk. Nevertheless, God is going to lift them up and bring them back unto himself. In verse 16, Samaria shall become desolate. She has rebelled against her God. They shall fall by the sword. Their infants shall be dashed in pieces. Their women with child shall be ripped up. And I'm sure that these are literal happenings at this point. In chapter 14, verse 1, O Israel, return to the Lord thy God. Thou hast fallen by thine iniquity. And this is the way that anyone falls, is by their own sin and iniquity. So Israel must recognize that. Verse 2, take with you words and turn to the Lord. Say unto him, take away all iniquity. Receive us graciously, so will we render the calves of our lips. Asher shall not save us. We will not ride upon horses, neither will we say any more to the work of our hands, you are gods, for in thee the fatherless finds mercy. So this again is a record of how that Israel is going to find themselves insofar as God is concerned, because Asher is not going to save them. That is, the nations are not going to save them. And we're not going to ride on horses. That means natural strength. Our own hands can't save us. We must turn to the Lord. So God says in verse 4, I will heal their backsliding. I will love them freely, for mine anger is turned away from him. And this will be true at that time when Israel repents and turns to God. Verse 8, yes. Ephraim shall say, what have I to do any more with idols? So they will be through with their idolatry. They will turn back unto God and no more be in submission to all of those foolish idols. I have heard him and observed him. I am like a green fir tree. From me is thy fruit found. It seems here that this is God speaking. From me is thy fruit found. That is, God is the source of all fruitfulness. Verse 9, who is wise, he shall understand these things. Prudent, and he shall know them. For the ways of the Lord are right, and the just shall walk in them, but the transgressors shall fall therein. And so we find that Israel must learn some lessons before that they can be restored to the place and put in the place that God intends for them to have. But nevertheless, God will see to it that that does happen. They will come under him. All right, any questions on Hosea before we go on?
I had a question on chapter 2.
Well, there are different nations, you see, that she would trust in, lovers rather than of God. See, these lovers simply mean that she trusts them and she takes things from them rather than from the hand of God. Especially in the end time, you find she'll be looking to the nations for arms, looking for the nations for anything to protect herself with and things of this nature, you see. So they're called lovers because she would rather submit them unto them than unto God. Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
Chapter 14, verse 2. That part says, so we'll render the calves of our lips. Does that speak of praise?
That's just the, right, the praise of their lips. We shall render the calves or the praise. Instead of praising all the foolishness that they did in the past, and they will lend these unto God, or give them to him. All right, anyone else? Okay, Book of Jonah. How Jonah, I believe, actually prophesied to the same people as what Hosea did as far as under Israel. But at this time, we find something a little bit different in the life of Jonah. You remember in the New Testament that Jesus said, forget where it is, anyway, that no other sign shall be given to this generation outside of Jonah, as he was in the heart of the earth 3 days and three nights, so the Son of Man also, or in the fish's belly, so the Son of Man was going to be in the heart of the earth. Now we find then that Jonah is actually a type of Christ by his life. Now we're going to notice some more wonderful things about Jonah in relation to Christ as we go on. But he is especially a prophet by his life. And he is also representative of the nation of Israel. That is, the things that he experiences here in this book are prophetic of Israel. All right. Now, as I said, as Jonah was in the fish's belly 3 days and nights, he did not see corruption. Christ was in the heart of the earth 3 days and nights and did not see corruption. And so there is a similarity here with these two. All right, verse 1, the word of the Lord came unto Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and cry against it. Their wickedness has come up before me. Now, Nineveh is the capital of Assyria, and Jonah was told to go and prophesy unto this city. Now, we can understand, if we begin to think a little bit, why he didn't want to go up here, because they were the enemies of Israel. It would be like us going over and if we really were not filled with the love of God, going over and prophesying unto the communists or those that had treated, take for instance the North Vietnamese. How many of us have a real desire to go over there and take the gospel to them after the way that they treated our prisoners of war? You see, so this would be the same thing like it was with Jonah. This is why he didn't want to go, it's because they were enemies of Israel. And so we cannot be too hard on him, yet we must believe God was a little hard on him. Alright. Anyway, verse 3. Here's what we want to notice is that Jonah is typical of Christ as well as of Israel. And so we'll review these side by side. I hope it does not get too confusing for you switching from Christ to Jonah. But anyway, first in verse 3, Jonah rose up to flee unto Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. This is the first thing we find out about Jesus, is that he went out from the presence of the Lord. Now, it was not fleeing the way that Jonah was, but nevertheless, Jesus went out from the presence of God, and he went down to, he went down to Joppa. And Joppa means beautiful. It is typical of the world as it appeals unto men, and men do think this world is beautiful. They think of every way under the sun to stay here. They spend millions of dollars upon trying to find cures for dreaded diseases in order that they could live here. And so they do think that the world is beautiful, and they come up with many wonderful things. Well, anyway, Joppa is typical of that world, and this is what Jesus did. He came down to Joppa. He came down to the world, and he found a ship going to Tarshish. Now, this ship is actually representative of humanity, the entire race, as we will notice a little bit later on. And it was going down to Tarshish. Now, one rendering of this word Tarshish is poverty. And this is exactly where that the ship was bound for. It was bound for poverty. Men were just bound for hell. That's all there is to it. They were down in degradation and sin. So notice that Christ took upon him the form of a man, and he became bound exactly on that same downward course. The only thing, he went down where the ship actually didn't get to Tarshish as far as Christ was concerned, but Jesus got there. He went down into the very lowest depths of the depths for humanity. And then he paid the fare thereof. Well, Jesus paid the fare too, and what a price he paid. We find he came into the world, he gave up the equality which he had with his Father, he took upon himself the form of a man, was made in the likeness of sinful flesh, and so he was not forced, even as Jonah was not forced. Nobody Nobody forced him to go in there and paid his fare for him. He paid the fare, just as Jesus paid the fare willingly in obedience unto his Father's will. All right, concerning Israel, they did exactly the same thing. They paid the fare. In other words, they did it willingly. Nobody made them go away from the presence of the Lord. Nobody made them run from God, but they willingly paid the fare. And they went down into it to go with them unto Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. Verse 4, but the Lord sent out a great wind into the sea, and there was a mighty tempest in the sea, so that the ship was like to be broken. All right, when viewing this first in relation to Israel, when Israel went away from the Lord, there was a great tumult, and things have not been right since Israel has not been at the head of the nations. Everything is in the wrong place, and so there was indeed a tumult and a great wind into the sea. The sea speaks of these Gentile nations and the wickedness that prevails in the world even today. So it all centers around the nation of Israel. We read over in Psalm 2, why do the people, or the heathen, rage and the people imagine a vain thing? Well, the heathen are raging, and they're raging right around that little old melting pot over there in the Middle East. It's Israel that's stirring up all of the problem as far as the nations are concerned. And you just mark it well. You listen to the way that people begin to blame Israel for the things that are happening, whether it's Israel's fault or not. All right, anyway, there is a great wind into the sea. Well, again, concerning Christ, when he came into the world, there was a great tumult, too. Jewish people were wanting to rebel against the Roman government. Barabbas was one of these particular ones. He was the one that went out, and we might get the wrong idea about Barabbas. He was a thief and a murderer, all right. But Barabbas was trying to do what he thought was right. He was trying to liberate the Jews, but it was not in God's way. It was in his own way. And so there was quite a raging and quite a tumult caused by him. And then wherever Jesus went, you will find that there was a tumult. Jesus says, I'm not come to bring peace. I'm come to bring division. And he did, because people either believed upon him or they did not. And there was always a tumult whenever he went. And look at the times that they tried to kill him. Why? You talk about a tumult. You talk about the sea raging. Whenever Jesus was there, he surely did bring a lot of raging when he came into the world. And so this is what we have here, that the Lord sent a great wind and there was a mighty tempest in the sea. Well, verse 5, the mariners were afraid, and they cried every man to his God, and cast forth the wares that were in the ship under the sea to lighten it of them. But Jonah was going down in the sides of the ship, and he lay and was fast asleep. All right, now Jonah, at this particular point, being fast asleep, it tells us that blindness in part is happened unto Israel. They don't really know that they're the cause of all the world's problems. They don't know that whenever they turn back unto the Lord, then everything is going to be restored. Jesus is going to become the King of Kings, Lord of Lords. He's the Prince of Peace. Israel are not aware of that today. They're sleeping down here in the middle of this ship. You see, they don't know that. But they will come to reality here very shortly. All right, concerning Christ, though, these mariners were afraid, and they began to throw out everything into the sea and everything that they could. And it seems that this is significant, of course, the way that men would try to redeem themselves, and Christ is in the background. They do not know that redemption actually lies with him. So they rejected Christ as the Savior, as the sacrifice, and so they tried to lighten the ship, throw everything out and do as good as we possibly can, and we'll save ourselves. But Christ is asleep, or he is in the background. He is not manifest at this time. Well, finally, the shipmaster came to him and says, what do you mean, sleeping? Arise, call on your God. And if so be that God will think upon us, we perish not. And they said, come every one to his fellow, and come, let us cast lots. Let's see who's causing the problem around here. So they cast lots and find out that it was Jonah. Well, again, Jesus caused a great tumult when he came into the world. Wherever he went, the lot fell on him, because he was the one that was such a matter of controversy, even after he was dead. And been raised from the grave. Well, look at the tumult that the Apostle Paul caused when he would speak in that name, and the other apostles when they would speak in the name of Jesus. All right, in verse 9, he tells them, said unto them, I am an Hebrew. I fear the Lord, the God of heaven, which has made the sea and the dry land. Then were the men exceedingly afraid, and said unto him, why have you done this? Then the men knew that he fled from the presence of the Lord, because he told them. He said unto, they said unto him, What shall we do unto thee, that the sea may be calm unto us? For the sea wrought and was tempestuous. So now they've got to the secret of the problem. They want to know what to do. Verse 12, he said unto them, Take me up and cast me forth into the sea. Well, here again, we find Jesus trying to tell men what it is going to take in order to calm the sea. Now, they want the sea calmed, as we find in verse 11, says, What shall we do unto thee that the sea may be calm unto us? And men wanted to know when Jesus was here. Well, what can we do? How can we make these the sea quit raging, as it were? And how can we obtain peace? He told them in verse 12, he said, Cast me forth into the sea. So shall the sea be calm unto you, for I know that for my sake this great tempest is upon you. Nevertheless, the men rowed hard to bring it to the land. This is what happened in Jesus' time. There were those people over and over again. His representative of Peter, you know, when Jesus told him in so many words, I've got to be cast into the sea. I've got to die. I've got to go to the cross. And Peter said, Be it far from you, Lord. No, sir, not that. Jesus said, Get thee behind me, Satan. Well, you see, they were trying hard to row it to the land. Men were, Peter would like for Jesus to have, would, in other words, he would have liked to have found salvation and bypassed the cross. And many people that did not understand redemption would have liked the same thing. Peter didn't want Jesus to go to that cross. He did not want to give up Christ. He loved him, and he did not want him to go to the cross at all. But nevertheless, these men rowed hard to bring it to the land. They wanted life, and lay not on us innocent blood. Thou, O Lord, hast done as it has pleased thee. And so they took up Jonah, cast him forth into the sea, and the sea ceased from her raging. Well, these, as we very well know, the people in Jesus' time that actually put him on the cross, they were no more guilty of that than what we were, because we were all guilty. And so we find today that we acknowledge we should have been there, but his blood is not upon us, except for salvation. All right. So notice in verse 15, they took up Jonah and they cast him into the sea, and the sea ceased from her raging. Here we find in Jesus' case, he was delivered unto judgment, and we will go through that judgment in just a little bit. Concerning the nation of Israel, it simply means that they have been cast out into the midst of the nations. They're not back asleep in some little ship protected now, but they're right in the middle of the nations. And so there has been quite a stir over them. Then the men feared the Lord exceedingly and offered a sacrifice unto the Lord and made vows. Now this tells us, of course, of the time when the Gentiles are going to be blessed as a result of the nation of Israel, because they will fear the Lord. They'll offer sacrifices to the Lord, make vows, and so on. So when Israel is actually cast unto into the raging at this particular time, but they will be a source of blessing unto the Gentile. We'll notice that a little bit later on. Now in verse 17, the Lord had prepared a great fish to swallow up Jonah, and Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. All right, there are four things I believe that God prepared in this book, and this is the first one. He prepared a great fish. And so there are many preparations that God has made for the nation of Israel, too. All right, in chapter 2, we find verse 1, Jonah prayed unto the Lord his God out of the fish's belly. Now this again, Israel, in the midst of all of their trouble, and I'll tell you, if you're in the belly of a big fish, that's a lot of trouble to be in. But this is exactly where Israel finds themselves, you see, because they're in the middle of a whole lot of trouble at this particular point, and this is where they will begin to cry out unto God and to call upon him. All right. In verse 2, it said, I cried by reason of mine affliction unto the Lord. Now then, I want to notice this in relation to Christ. And don't think for one minute that this, in relation to Jesus, is uttered from the heart of the earth, because it is not. As we said a while ago, when Jesus was cast into the sea and actually swallowed by this big fish, It was a time when he was actually delivered under the Roman government, and they put him on the cross. Now, the reason I say that, and the reason I want you to be sure and get that, is simply because of this. When Jesus went into the heart of the earth, the battle was already over. He cried out on the cross, "It is finished." Now, there was a doctrine here a few years ago that somebody said that Jesus went into the heart of the earth and he grappled with Satan and all of this foolishness. But when Jesus went into the heart of the earth, the battle was already won. Redemption was accomplished. He said, "It is finished." God was satisfied. That thing was... Yeah, it was on the crash screen. Hopefully we're going there. Now in this, as I said, we cannot say that Jesus went into the heart of the earth and grappled with the devil and won the victory, because he won that there on the cross. And when he said "it is finished," then that's exactly what he meant. It was finished right there. When Jesus went into the heart of the earth, he preached to the captive spirits. And he did not preach unto the captive wicked spirits, because he couldn't do them any good. Preaching won't do a wicked spirit any good after they're gone. Now is the day of salvation, and if men do not repent and believe upon Christ while they're here on the earth, there is no other repentance for them. He preached to those captive spirits, and then we read he led captivity captive, and then he went on high. So the things that we're going to read here in this chapter 2 are actually Jesus' feelings, and they were spoken in type as he was on the cross. So in verse 2 he said, "I cry by reason of mine affliction." His affliction was the fact that he was made sin for humanity. And he was identified with us in our affliction, in our sin, in all of our degradation and downfall. And then he said, "I cried unto the Lord, and he heard me. Out of the belly of hell cried I, and thou heardest my voice." Now again, of course, Jonah, his hell was right there in a fish's belly, and I think that we could say that he said that just about right. I've never been there, but anyway, I can imagine what it would be. But concerning Christ, this was the very lowest depths. Now, we can't really imagine what that means, because we've never been separated from God. But the things that we will read concerning Christ is when God actually had to cast his...